This may appear to be only monkey business, but in reality, it's very serious, ladies.
Zero Issues Comic Podcast.
Zero Issues
Comic Podcast.
Excelsior!
Hey!
Should we welcome folks to the show?
I'm not opposed to it.
All right,
I support that.
Okay, well Then, okay, we have a consensus. Yeah. Welcome everyone.
Yeah.
Hello, welcome to another delightful episode of Zero Issues. My name's Kyle.
I'm Bri.
And I'm Merc.
And we are gonna have an interview with a lovely comic creator in just a little bit. But before that.
Kind of linking
yeah.
to that interview.
Okay. Before that, we should play the warm-up music.
Welcome to the warm-up.
And it played.
I liked it.
And here we are in the warm-up.
Ooh.
And this will make sense when we get to the interview, but we're going to talk about not even just the Marvel character, any character, comic character, based on Gilgamesh.
That's right.
The Epic of Gilgamesh. That's the from Sumerian text.
Not to be mixed up with that other Mesh.
No.
Nor Messy Gil, our weird neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Or Meshy Gil.
Yeah. Who, again, wears the mesh shirt.
Yes.
And is roommates with Messy Gil.
Yes. They're both kind of messy, but the one wears the mesh shirt.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Who wears the mesh shirt in your household?
Gil. I also.
It's Glenn Danzig in mine.
Oh, I mean, congratulations and also I'm sorry.
It's half the people I
thank
went to high school with.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's get meshy.
So Gilgamesh, the epic.
Gilgamesh.
The original epic of Gilgamesh from Sumerian texts from like 2100 to 1200. BCE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, probably came about around the same time as the game Tag.
What?
For some reason, I was looking up Tag recently. Like, the game Tag. I was like, how old is Tag? It's really old.
Like, Sumerian old.
Like, maybe older.
Really?
Yeah.
How would they know? There's no way to know that. How would you know that?
Hieroglyphics.
But, like, Sumerian text is one of the. Well, I guess some hieroglyphics.
I don't know.
The old kingdom.
I'm not a scientist.
In those days, they killed you, though.
Yeah.
It was, got
it was,
you.
It was rock tag.
Stab.
It was freeze tag, and they would stab you with an icicle.
Yeah.
And then it would melt, and there would be no evidence.
Oh,
and then you play ghost tag.
The perfect crime.
Then you play ground tag. Yeah. That one's the best.
Pretty good.
And then there's laser tag. Anyway, Gilgamesh.
They had that in the ancient Sumerian. Never mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah, has there been, I only, in my research, and I'll be honest, I didn't delve too deep.
Mm-hmm.
I went more for the Marvel one.
You know, I started going for the Marvel one, but then I went for the DC one.
Oh, so there is a DC one.
There is a DC, well, yes and no.
Are we talking about Gilgamesh 2?
We are talking about Gilgamesh 2.
I'm ready for that.
All
slightly
right.
ready for that. I haven't like, read it, but I'm.
Yeah, so Gilgamesh 2. Was a four-issue...
This time it's personal.
...maxi series written and drawn by Jim Starlin.
Really?
In 1989. Yeah. It was sort of like around the time of a lot of other, like, you know, prestige graphic novel...
Yeah.
...short series sort of things.
We were in Vertigo times, you know?
Yeah.
They were getting... People getting ambitious.
Exactly. But it was like, you know, kind of a take on the Superman story where, you know... last son or sons in this case, last two kids of there's like an alien spaceship that shows up over Earth and it
just throws them out the back.
They
garbage dump.
Like they get blown up, but before they get blown up, they're like, oh, we gotta, you know, we'll save our species by sending two
males.
That's whoopsie doodle. Whoops,
two
they
male
goofed up.
Brothers.
Hey, aliens might work differently. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know.
They look like guys and they're guys.
Yeah. Maybe it's Dragon Ball rules where if they have a kid with a human, it'll be more powerful. Maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Unless he isn't. I don't know.
But it, you know, like it was a 4-issue series. It takes place mostly in the far off future of 2012.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, sort of like a crappy future where there's, you know, 12 corporations that run the world.
Yeah, it's like literally like the corporate states of America. And yeah, it's like a, you know, an anti-corporate kind of satire piece that's sort of a weird sci-fi retelling of Gilgamesh.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, I thought I read or heard something when I was looking into it that, like, they named him Gilgamesh, but, like,
They meant to name him Beowulf.
Yeah,
and like it up. the parents that pick him up, it's like two hippies, and yeah, the mom is talking about Beowulf basically, and like, you know, remember when we got together, honey, and I was in that English lit class, and there was that story about Grendel, and Grendel was coming, and the hero had to fight, and oh, what did they call him? Gilgamesh. Yeah, that's it.
Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Batman.
Conveniently, though, his life ended up paralleling Gilgamesh after yes, all, so
yeah. But with more cyber ninjas.
More cyber ninjas, yeah.
Well, slightly more cyber ninjas than the original Gilgamesh.
I'm not gonna lie, only to you, a couple so more. Far seems like a complete improvement.
Interesting.
Most of what you need to know, I you know, it's never been collected apparently in English. Oh, it's been collected in Spanish, but not in English.
What?
It's a beautiful looking book though, and I want to read it. I just didn't have time before this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Jim Starlin.
After,
Jim Starlin
like after,
is just like
Warlock and stuff like that. I could be wrong, but
if it's 89, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, way after, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, like how much stuff did he do at DC?
That's the thing. Bit. When you said that, he did Batman.
He wrote
The Cult.
Yeah.
Oh, I just that thing that I just, yeah, I just yeah, got
and
that
Death
question.
In the Family.
Yeah. Right.
Joe Caro, he was drawing. I mean, yeah, I did quite a bit.
I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So that's the thing. Again, what I read, I wanna check this out pretty badly. I don't know. I think the odds of finding it physically are pretty
slim.
Pretty slim.
Yeah.
So yo ho.
But what about this Marvel one?
There's
a Marvel Gilgamesh.
The Marvel Gilgamesh. He's one of the Eternals. Mm. And if you've seen the movie. I know. Sorry. I enjoyed the Eternals.
He's one of the good ones in the movie.
Yeah, no, I did like him in the movie.
There's the movie, but then even in the books. Early on, he's not really a major player at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's introduced, but he was... And his background is not really fully explained. He's just one of the extra Eternals. He's just a background Eternal. he's a background dancer.
This one comes with extra Eternals.
Yeah. He's just back there doing the single ladies dance. You know?
Yeah.
But I guess apparently... Yeah, like he didn't know he was an Eternal or something, and then it's told he's an Eternal, and he learns about his background, but then for some reason, and I don't know if it's ever been explained, Zuras, who's like the head of the Eternals.
Yeah, the Prime Eternal?
Sure.
Whatever. I think that's what they call it.
Maybe. I'm not the Eternals master.
Executive Eternal.
Yeah. Executive Vice Eternal.
Mm.
Junior Executive Vice Eternal.
CEO Eternal.
He does nothing at all.
Yeah. He just signs off.
Yeah. If that.
But he exiles or banishes Gilgamesh to a specific, I don't know where it is. It's like in the Olympus Muncie. Area, which is like, I think technically within the Eternals realm, but he's confined to this area or something of that.
Okay.
It's never really explained.
Wisconsin.
Sure.
Yeah.
I watched Dogma and then night. He's not really used.
It holds up for the most part.
He's not really used. He's not really tapped into. And then he appears in a few Thor comics because the Eternals connected to the Celestials. All of a sudden, Thor discovers the Celestials and like, who is this? And Gilgamesh comes in, but he comes in as he's had several names. He's been called Hero Gilgamesh and the Forgotten One, he's got what's called the Forgotten One space armor. Which I really like. Like, it's kind of silvery white.
It's
with these
very
pink.
Jack Kirby.
It's totally Jack Kirby. But it's very simplistic Jack Kirby. It's not like crazy tripping out Jack Kirby. It's just like the pink lines. But it's... And I
think every flavor of Jack Kirby is kind of
awesome. He looks like a little
awesome.
Tiny Celestial.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, tiny compared to a Celestial.
Yes,
I
exactly.
It towers over us.
Yes.
But it's a big scale here.
Yeah.
But in that storyline, him and Thor... fight it out. And like, Thor is a powerhouse.
Yeah.
And it's always this one picture that I always look at, that it's like the two of them fighting, and the Forgotten One's hand is like the size of Thor's head. I was like, ooh, I like this. This is fun.
Like, you know, if your hand is the size of your head.
Big gloves.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then he's kind of, he's there and he's gone. I think he's, I don't know if he's, he pops back occasionally in comics, pretty minorly.
Yeah.
And then he's brought back, there was a point in the 90s, I'm not sure, the it might be 89, 90, early 90s, that
the Avengers... The time that a certain other Gilgamesh was having a little yeah, epic exactly. of his own.
he's... They did a little revamp. Oh, I guess it was because Captain America was the captain
right.
at that point. Oh, so right. it was yes. 89 or something like that. So they get a whole new team. And it's like, I picked up this issue because I was like, what the hell is going on? And on the front is the captain running in front and Mr. Fantastic, Invisible Woman. There was somebody else. And then Gilgamesh.
Someone else.
I just someone else. I can't remember.
The captain from Next Wave. It's there's two
people. Yeah,
yeah. yeah right.
Just swearing at everybody.
But you don't know it's Gilgamesh. I was like, who the hell is this guy? That is the stupidest looking costume I've ever seen, which I found out, yes, it's Gilgamesh, and it was redesigned by John Buscema for this issue. And he's we were talking about it
as
earlier.
A dare.
He's got this helmet that looks like he represents cows.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's like, this is not a good look for an Avenger.
No.
Pretty weak. And he was...
is he the only cow-themed Avenger so far? Maybe.
He was
I don't know.
Summarily taken off the book shortly thereafter. History
that.
Pun.
Wow.
I'm trying to think of any other cow-themed Avengers characters.
Yeah, no. I'm not seeing any.
No.
Not in my brain. Not in my mind's eye or whatever.
There's Apocalypse Cow, but that's a Tick character. So.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
It's
well,
fine.
Disney will buy it eventually. We'll yeah. get there.
Hooray! Hooray!
I feel like I really made a mesh of things. Let's
let's gill ourselves. No, let's go on. Let's get on to the main thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
What the f-
we have a guest. Gadzooks. Oh, it's not a common thing, but we do have a guest, Mr. Dennis Robinson from PA, which we're Canadian, and we're like, we think that's Pennsylvania.
Hey, you got it. So. Or, you know what? We also accept Pennsylvania, especially with where I live in Pennsylvania, so either one is fine.
No. You're in Gettysburg?
Yes.
Okay.
Except the way you know that I'm in... Gettysburg is the fact that we don't pronounce it correctly when we live in Gettysburg. Everybody outside of the town pronounces it the way that it should be because the guy's name is James Geddes. But everyone who lives here calls it Gettysburg.
Yeah.
Why?
So more Armageddon than spaghetti.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's...
I mean, like, Canada, there's Toronto, but everyone in Toronto calls it Toronto. So, I mean, like, you know,
okay,
it's, it happens. It happens.
Boom.
Thunder Bay, I'm going to have to find a weird way to pronounce that, but... get back to
shit,
me. Get back to me.
Shithole. No.
Yeah. Just cursing. Just shit.
Oh,
shit.
No.
Shit. Fuck.
It's shit.
Shit.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Hey, I hail from shit. Fuck. You know, Canada. It's fine. Whatever. Oh.
Look,
okay.
I'm
exactly
sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, you're mixing it up with shithole.
Oh yeah. All right,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have Mr. Dennis Robinson from two different things. He's from Hivehead Studios. Comic creator, writer, but he's also got Botched D&D podcast.
Yes.
Podcast? What the hell's a podcast?
I believe that's where you're working out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we definitely, yeah. if you've ever seen a picture of any of us, you would.
Yeah, well, anybody who records a podcast, most of them
well,
are
come
not
on, there's buff. There's buff nerds. Those exist.
That's true. You know what? You just add the metal clanking noises in post.
Yeah,
it's
really.
Fine.
Nobody exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect. Hivehead? I like the name Hivehead Studios because my head is also full of bees.
There you go.
So, quick aside, the story behind that. In the long,
yes,
long,
please.
long ago of 2005, when I went to art school for a small amount of time, mm-hmm. I had an animation class and they had us make a flip book. And mine was a big fat head with a beehive haircut, except it was literally just a beehive. Bee flies out the top, buzzes around, he eats it. It bounces around his cheeks. His head explodes into like 1,000 bees, and then it spells out Hivehead Studios. And my teacher at the time was like, that's good. Keep that. Like, keep that title. Like, keep it. And so I just kept it in the back of my head for
Yep.
More than a decade. And then I was like, what am I going to name? I need something for business like tax purposes. What am I going to name? Oh, Hive Head Studios. And then there you go.
I mean, whenever this becomes a movie or a TV series, there's going to be like a studio animated, just gruesome, as detailed as possible, I think.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, 100%. The reimagining of the Hive Head.
The ultimate edition, yes.
Yeah, the ultimate Zack Snyder cut of the Hive Head.
Lovely. Wow. It's in 3-4. 4-3? It's in 3-4. It's really narrow and taller than it should be. It's like a phone.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got a lot of filters on it, and there's random slow-mo for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quibi's coming back.
It's really good, and everybody thinks it's really good.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Sure. Some people think it's really good. Sure.
Yeah.
And sure, originally the flipbook was only 30 seconds, but the cut is actually 3 hours long, so.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's no way to fit that much slow-mo in otherwise.
Exactly.
So listeners of our podcast might recognize his name and some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about. We actually reviewed your first book of this series, the Lycan series, the Lycan Solomon's Odyssey, which I'm not even sure. How long ago was that?
Well, so I think the review, which thank you, by the way, was 2 years ago, because I think you reviewed it for the Kickstarter for the second book that was coming out. I think.
That explains why we missed. That makes sense. Okay, good. So we didn't miss a bunch.
Yeah. So the second book wasn't done yet, so I hadn't given that to you. I can't remember if I sent that over today or if it was a different day. I know I sent over a sample for the third book today. So I was like, yeah, it's probably not enough time, but whatever.
you sent book two and a preview, and I'm using air quotes here, a preview of book three, and then we're flipping through, and we're like, this is 28 pages. This is a hefty preview. Yeah.
It's a third of the book, so I was like, eh, it's getting a preview.
Yeah.
They're getting a little, and that, which understandably, the deeper you get into the story, obviously there's just going to be more and more to sort of get into, and we'll talk about it, obviously. That's why we're here.
Sounds good.
So maybe we'll ask you to just set up the basic idea of I could explain Lycan, but I probably can't explain it as well as
I'm sure you've got a solid, a nice pitch already.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, the elevator pitch.
I definitely haven't said it 8,000 times at the 27 conventions that I went to last year. Definitely haven't said the same thing over and over and over again.
A lot of conventions.
I don't recommend doing that many. I don't recommend it. It's not a good time.
Yeah.
So the way I describe it when people come over the table is that Lycan Solomon's Odyssey is the story of the world's first werewolf, and it's a mix of horror, mythology, adventure, and a little bit of history. So that's the very basic pitch for it. The first book in the series is the origin story. It sets up the world and the character and all this stuff. Each book in the series moves along through time, goes into little different regions as far as he could walk anyways. So it's the same character, Solomon, through each of the books. The second book opens the world up a little bit more. So we get magic, we go into ancient Arabic mythology, folklore, monsters, stuff like that. The third book is like set around Sumeria. The best way I describe it is H.P. Lovecraft meets Gilgamesh. That's how I describe the third one in the series anyways. And that one opens it up, obviously, because of H.P. Lovecraft, to cosmic sort of things and gods and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. We were actually just talking about it before you came on. And I just said, I really enjoyed this, how it was like each one, you start kind of intimate in that first really close-knit group, the family, the village, and then it starts to build. The next book, it expands a little more, and you get like kind of a bigger mythology to it and just a wider view of the world. And then, third, you're like getting into gods and things and cities. And I'm a huge history nut, so I was like, I'm trying to figure it out before you actually said it in the book. I'm like, oh, he's by which river? Oh, it's the Euphrates. I'm like, is this Babylon? Is this? And then you're like, Gilgamesh. Oh my God, Gilgamesh. Oh, yeah.
He's here.
So,
he's here.
Really?
So with Gilgamesh, so the way that I'm doing the third book, because a lot of people like you, I'm sure, are familiar with the Epic of Gilgamesh. So the way that I'm framing this is, what if the Epic of Gilgamesh is the way Gilgamesh tells that story? So, like, what if something completely different happened to Gilgamesh, but that's just the way he tells the story? So, the city that Gilgamesh is from is not the same city that takes place here. In fact, the city that's here is made up. It doesn't exist. Okay. And that was kind of the point, that whatever happened in this book, Gilgamesh doesn't want anybody to really know all of those things. So he changes the story and tells it to other people. And then, you know, through telephone, it just sort of keeps changing over time. So that's sort of the premise behind it. So if you were looking at it from the stand, because I don't know how much you were anticipating, like, hey, that's not the city that Gilgamesh is supposed to be in or anything like that. That's why. So it's
I was like, I'm like, are you tweaking that? Yeah, exactly. Are you going for super historic accuracy? Not that you have to. But
now,
I'm like, oh,
I will say for the fourth book, because now we're getting into written history, the fourth book takes place in Egypt. That one was a lot of research and trying to figure out, okay, who's alive at this time and this time and where's this in relation to this? Can you see the Great Pyramids from this place? It's like, well, let me pull up a map and just try and, I think they might be able to see it because you can't find any pictures of like somebody looking at them from that distance. So it's like, okay.
Right.
So in now that I'm getting in future books where it's like in written history, it's a lot less easy to sort of play around with some stuff because everything so far has been pre-written. So it's like, okay, well, there are some things that, you know, I have to stick with, but for the most part, I can sort of play around in the sandbox a little bit. Now I'm getting a little bit more restricted in terms of, you know, what I can tweak and mess with and that sort of thing.
Right.
So speaking of fourth book, do you have this planned out? Like, have you decided this is 20 books or this is
15?
15? Okay.
15.
All right. All right.
I know what happens all the way to the last page of the last book.
Wow.
Ends in 1983.
Yeah. So the inspiration for that was I used to watch the TV show Supernatural all the time.
Yeah.
And I remember they said that Eric Kripke, the guy who wrote and ran that show, had the entire first five seasons, which was supposed to be the entire run of the show, figured out before it even started. And so I was like, oh, I really like that idea of like, you know exactly where everything's going to go. So instead of like being reactionary to stuff, you're like, this is the story. Like,
the plan, yeah.
And then, you know, if you need to change things or tweak things as you go along, that's fine. But the overall major plot points, the bones, that'll be the same, you know, throughout.
Right.
Okay. And are you planning, like, I don't want to get too into it because I don't, you know, I'm sort of mindful of spoilers. So feel free to dodge this question. Is it, is the plan going... Or is the plan going to be go up to modern day or?
Yes.
Okay.
So the last book will be set in slightly future. Flying cars or anything like that, but like maybe 20 years in the future. Although come to think of it, by the time the books get done, it'll probably just be present day.
just push it forward.
Yeah. Just keep pushing it forward another 20 years.
Wow, that's incredible to have the whole thing planned out. And then on top of that, to actually be executing on it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely, it makes it easier from a standpoint of, since I know what's coming and I know what, you know, needs to happen, I can sort of plan things out and be like, okay, I need to do this, then I need to do this. Well, if my plan is to do this in the story down the road here, well, then I need to set this up, you know, at this point, that kind of thing. So for me, it just helps sort of to be able to step back and look at, okay, here's the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
And so now I can then zoom back in on a certain point and, you know, make the story more cohesive that way, I think.
Set your story beats and I'm like, I need this to be over here.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And again, sorry to ask for spoilers, but what chapter is it where Solomon partakes in a massacre at Studios 54? That's all I want to know.
So that time period would definitely be in the third arc of books.
Okay. All right.
And it would probably be in the fourth or fifth book of that series. So book 14 or 15?
I got to tell you, I made the dumbest joke possible and immediately had an answer. Immediately had a timeline answer. Yeah. Pretty good.
You got Lycan, like Solomon's Quaalude journey.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because like there's things that I want to do in that last third of the book where it's more modern day. Obviously, I have to do the Civil War at some point and a little bit of Western stuff just because I love wild, like, Clint Eastwood, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly, stuff like that. So I definitely want to play. And I live in Gettysburg, so I have to do some sort of Civil War stuff.
Plus, Werewolf Cowboy.
Yeah, I got to put it in there at some point. And Wild West did exist at the same time as the Civil War, so I can make it work. But also I want to go into like Native Americans, like that mythology and that culture mm-hmm. before, you know, all that. And then I'd like to do something with the world wars, because I think that could be interesting, especially, you know, with all the whole the Hitler and the occult stuff. Like you could get into some really crazy stuff, I feel like.
Yeah.
Things like that. And then again, moving more into sort of modern day and sort of focusing a little bit more on like American stuff, maybe on the last book or two, something like that. So okay. That's right. The plan anyways.
Wow.
Obviously there's a huge history link through the whole entire thing. Is it, where does that come from? Like, do you have a history background or you, no. You were talking about like animation art background a bit, but.
So I really dig history, but mostly I love mythology. Back in, oh God, I don't remember what year the first God of War came out, but when that came out, like I got really into mythology. And then with the podcast, one of our seasons was set in 1932 New York. And the reason I set it there, and it was a like an H.P. Lovecraft sort of theme to it. And the reason I set it there is because it's a cultural mixing pot. So I could pull mythologies and monsters from anywhere in the right. world, and it would make sense for them to be mm. there. And through doing that research, I was like, oh my God, there's so much crazy shit out there.
Yeah, totally.
That like, yeah. like one of my, the funniest ones to me is the Leshy. Have you ever heard of the Leshy?
Yes.
Oh my God. It's so weird in that it'll tickle you to death, but you combat it if you have your clothes on backwards and your shoes on the opposite feet. Then it'll leave you alone. I'm like, why?
That Who came up out. With that? Because it's like, you're that? Weird. It thinks you're the weird one.
Yeah. Or Rougarous. Rougarous are one of the funniest things to me because the way you combat a Rougarou, I think if memory serves me, you put 13 items on your porch or outside your door. And Rougarous can't count past 12. So they get frustrated and they just leave.
And that's how we got the cartoon Rugrats.
Yeah.
And
that's how you get
Rugrats. Yeah. Rougarous. So.
This is why education systems are important, especially for. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's sort of how I got into the everything. And then as far as werewolves go, that came because when I was in elementary school, they would just sort of throw us in the library and be like, yeah, just entertain yourselves for the next hour. And I just stumbled upon a picture book of Lon Chaney's The Wolfman. I think it was orange or purple. I can't remember exactly, but I had never seen or heard of a werewolf before, and I was like, what is this? And I was just fascinated, flipping through the pages, and it showed the transformation in this. And ever since then, I've been really interested in characters that have, like, a duality. So, like, the Incredible Hulk. It's, like, two separate personalities, or sometimes many, many personalities. Or Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, or, you know, werewolves, stuff like that. So any of that, anytime a character has this sort of duality to them where it's like multiple things going on within one person, I just find that compelling and interesting ever since. So I've always been into werewolves ever since then. So that's sort of how everything culminated together to where this book series sort of got started.
While we're still talking about your kind of background, you did say something about art school. Like what is your... Like you don't do any of the art on this, do you? Or do you?
No. There's not enough time in the universe.
So. Yeah.
I get that question at every show, by the way. They're like, oh, you do really great art. I'm like, I did not do the art. There's actually an artist or a writer that I met at, I can't remember what show it was. I think it was Pittsburgh. And he put a sign above his booth that says, I'm just the writer. I did not do the art. And he's like, and people still ask if I did the art.
Of course.
So, so I did start recently doing to try and take them to shows to try and get more people to come to the table. I did start doing Bob Ross style nerdy landscapes. So like the Death Star and stuff from animated movies, the cabin from Evil Dead. So, you know, different stuff, but in a Bob Ross style.
I mean, it does have plenty of little trees there. I mean, it
does.
It works.
There are a lot of little trees.
This little tree is going to kill you.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're not that happy in the Evil Dead cabin.
No, not so much. They're a little more
pretty violent,
other thingy.
Vengeful, yeah,
you know. Yeah. That I was thinking more what Kyle said.
Yeah.
other
good,
thingy.
Good film. Excellent film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what? How did you meet your artist, and what's the working relationship like there? Because you have a team.
You've got a huge team.
Yeah. So the team. So the way that it all got started. So. we've been doing, the whole thing got started because of Botched. Mm-hmm. We started Botched in 2016, and then in late 2016, early 2017, we joined a no longer existing podcasting network. And then that network runs the podcasting track at Dragon Con, which is a big convention down in Georgia, if you've never heard of it. So we started doing live shows at Dragon Con. And that first year at Dragon Con, I pitched the book to people because I started hanging out with other nerds. And, you know, we started talking comics and I pitched the idea and they're like, yeah, you need to do that. And so that's how the ball sort of started getting rolling. And then at that first Dragon Con, we were also looking, I was going around Artist Alley asking artists if they'd like to make our weird, crazy, nutso stuff from the podcast. And the way that I was pitching it to them was, okay, imagine a blimp, but the blimp part is made of skinned cats. And then the boat part is made of cat bones. And the boat is manned by cats. And the boat has a Catlin gun, which when you crank it, it shoots feral cats at people. Right. And they were like, I want to do this. And I'm like, great. So that's how we sort of like got artists. And I say all that.
Whatever led to this happening, the cats that are piloting clearly won.
Yeah. Oh, so they were all owned, I guess, by a man named Catman Dude. So...
Fuck
because
off.
We love puns.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
He had pauldrons, so.
Goodness.
So good anyways.
Night, everybody.
Yeah. So anyways, so we did our first live show, and one of the people that was actually at our first live show, we've become very good friends with, and somehow this friend of mine, Shannon is her name, is friends with everybody. She used to tour with Jim Starlin, like... He would just have her come to conventions with her. And she just knows so many people in the industry just because she does charity work. I forget what the charity's called, but basically it's where they raise money for artists and writers of comics who are now down on their luck because, you know, they're retired or they have disabilities. I forget what it's
called.
Hero
Initiative?
Yes, Hero Initiative.
Yeah, Hero Initiative. Yes. Yeah.
So she does a lot of work for Hero Initiative. And that's how she met like Garth Ennis, and I forget. I mean, she could name drop all day. She just knows so damn many people. So then when I pitched the idea for the book, she was in love with it. And I started writing. However, I didn't know how to write a comic. So the first version of the book is this weird sort of mutant script where it's like a book, but like a comic. And it doesn't, it's very descriptive and it doesn't make any, like it's just weird because I didn't know what I was doing. But the idea was to just get the story out to see what people thought and then tweak it from there. So if you look in the books and you see anybody who's marked as an executive producer, those are the people that read those initial versions of the book and gave me feedback. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what
I think we wondered that based on the review we sort of talked about.
I was
going to
say,
bit.
I think I remember you guys talking about that. Yeah. Because I was like, nope. That wasn't money. That was they were just nice enough to review the weird mutant book, and then I gave them a credit.
Right. That's good. It was you know, we had to hold suspense for a little bit, but we had an answer to the question. Wonderful.
Yeah. Only took 2 years.
Whatever.
So they reviewed it, and every time they would review it, they would give me feedback, and I would tweak things and make changes. And then Shannon put me in touch with a writer named Henri Kumpen, and if you're not familiar with him, he does a series called Yi Sun Shin. And so he put me in touch with him, and Henri put me in touch with his original editor. And I gave those weird mutant scripts to him. And that guy, he's one of the creators of the book Faust, which I've seen the movie, but I've never seen the book. Mm.
Oh, yeah,
and so he read those scripts and said, there is nothing salvageable about these books. Not the characters, not the story, nothing. But... Ouch. If you'd like, you can pay me $1,800 and I will show you how to write a good book that's not this. Like, nothing about this. We'll do something different, but you can pay me.
What a weirdly specific number.
I know.
Yeah.
And so I was like, nah, thanks. I'm good. And I was about ready to just call it quits. And then Shannon pitched the book to Henri, and Henri hit me up and he was just like, hey, shoot me what you sent to him. He read it and he goes, okay, here's the problem. You don't know what you're doing. He's like, it's not that there's nothing good here. You just don't know what you're doing. And so he mentored me at that point, and he gave me like a script format to follow and taught me principles of like, this is how many panels per page, and this is what's important to put in captions, and this is what you want to show, don't tell, that sort of a thing, and how many captions per panel, all that stuff. So he sort of mentored me and taught me those sorts of fundamentals. And he was the editor for halfway through the first book. And then when we were working on the book and refining the scripts, that's when we started looking for an art team. And this was right before COVID happened. So the team, we were having a lot of trouble trying to put together people because his recommendation was like DeviantArt and stuff like that. But you just get so much, you get a lot, and a lot of it's not very good.
Right. And you want to find someone who can actually go the distance.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then things sort of died off a bit. And then one of the artists who does art for Botched, her husband is Gabbo. Who has done work for
Gabbo? That was the name.
Yeah.
Remember that? That's we were like Gabbo is the executive producer. We had a 10-minute joke.
Yeah, it was the puppet. It was the
But he
ended up putting me on a Facebook group. I can't remember the name exactly, but it's like connecting writers and artists, and you have to have like a legitimate ask. And you do that, and again, you get people who submit their portfolios, and then you could sort of whittle it down from there. And that's how I found most of my art team. My artist, Sal Denaire, he's out of Spain. I found him through there. The colorist is Ezekiel Dominguez. Found him through what's funny is Ezekiel works for a company called Stone Tower Studios, and they actually submitted a whole team to me. But I didn't like the art the art didn't match what I was going for.
Yeah. Right.
So, but I loved the colors. So I was like, hey, can I just have that guy and like not the other two? And they're like, yeah, that's fine. I was like, cool. Yoink. And then the letterer came over from Henri, Joel Saavedra. He's also out of Argentina. He's Henri's letterer for everything. And so he came on and I've been happy with it ever since. So I've managed to keep the art team together the whole time. The editors changed a bit because, like I said, Henri did half of the first book.
Yeah.
And then Gabbo became the art editor, and my friend Stephanie Crognola, she became the writing editor. And then in the second book, it was just Gabbo and Steph. And then the third book, it's just Steph. And then the fourth book, it's just Steph as well. So other than that, the team stays the same. The cover artists fluctuate. So the first book had the same cover artist for both of them. That was Christian Dabari. If you've heard of the series, I think it's Tales in Technahar. He did the art for that book. I think there's a few of them out. But so he's the original cover artist for those. And then he did the main cover for the second book and the main cover for the third book. The second book, I added two variant covers from one artist, Matthew Sutton. He's out of Chicago, I believe. He's done cover art for Marvel and DC and stuff like that. And
then that's a familiar name.
This book, the third one, he did a variant cover, but then also I got Maria Wolf to do the store exclusive cover, which I just got today, and it's pretty fantastic.
Nice.
That leads in really nicely to the next question, which I think Merc actually had.
We were talking about it before of like, so you're doing Kickstarters for this.
Yeah.
What is the process of, is it like you're just doing a Kickstarter, people pitch into the Kickstarter, you make the thing, here, have the thing, then you're done, now you work on the next book? Or do you, I know, like having done them myself, like I often, like, I'm going to create a bigger print run, and then now I have this, and I actually, like you contact the stores and go through Diamond or whatever you're going to do. Are you doing that, or are you just strictly Kickstarter and then done, go to the next?
Well, so Kickstarter is the main thing. I also do shows. That's the other way that I sort of get the book out there. I don't have Diamond or anything like that. We are in talks and publishing in like Spain. So, I mean, that might happen at some point, but
nice.
But for the most part, it's just mostly me doing my thing. In terms of production, when they start doing the art on one book, I've already started writing the next book. And then when they start on that book, then I'll start writing the next book. So, usually with the first two books, they've completed production by the time the Kickstarter starts. This time, because the book is 30% longer, the book's not 100% finished yet. Like, I just got page 82 out of the 90 for story today. So it's close, but it's not done just yet. And then the coloring is a little bit further behind that, and then the lettering is a little bit further behind that. So it's like a conveyor belt, but But I start planning the Kickstarters like a year in advance.
Wow.
And I start tinkering with... Because, like, when I go to shows, one thing I always tell people is networking is, like, a big thing that you should be doing for anything in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I started doing with shows is I started looking at other vendors and trying to figure out, okay, what are items that I could add to the Kickstarter that I think people would like. And so, for instance, with this next Kickstarter, there's a couple different things that I got via shows. One is I found a 3D artist who basically made me a werewolf miniature and then a 6-inch werewolf statue that I can 3D print myself. So then that's one of the Kickstarter goals. And then for every show I go to, if you sell crochet, you are busy the whole time. So I asked, I said, can you make me a crochet werewolf? And they're like, yeah. So now we have crochet werewolves in the Kickstarter. And if you back one of the rewards, you just get the 6-inch one. But if you want, you can upgrade to the 10-inch or the 18-inch werewolf, you know, to a bigger and better one if you so desire. So like that sort of part. So yeah, so I'm planning it the whole year, like trying to figure out, okay, what are going to be the reward tiers and, you know, what's the setup going to be like and, you know, all that jazz and like just trying to network. And then as you found out, I start reaching out to podcasts and things like that to see if it's possible to do some sort of promotion or like just anything. Usually I start reaching out like 6 months, 4 or 5 months. And then usually the response is, yeah, message me like closer to the event. Like, I'm not going to remember in 6 months. It's like, okay, sorry. Yep. And then message him again, you know, a month or two before the actual launch. So, yeah. So, no, it's a lot of work that goes into it, especially because I run the whole thing myself. So, like, no one else on the team, they help with doing the promotion and stuff like that, but they're not building the assets or getting somebody to build the assets or, like, putting it all together, writing it out, making the goofy videos and all that stuff. So, So yeah, the year's mostly spent planning and then doing shows and stuff and then just continuing production on the books, really.
Quick offshoot question. What do you do in real life? Like, how do you pay the bills?
I am a consultant. So the best way I describe my role as a
he's
consultant
an assassin.
is that I make animated propaganda videos for corporate use. Hmm. So like Ford, Honda, Toyota, Walmart, Google, stuff like that. I make just these goofy little internal videos like, hey, we're doing this thing. You don't have a choice in the matter, but this is why you should be excited about it. I make a video. I do lots of voiceover work for them and stuff like that too. So that's my day job anyways. Mostly the day job just pays for me to be able to do the comics because I pay for everything out of my own pocket.
Of course.
And then...
All three of us understand that. And we all do the same sort of stuff. Yeah.
Not a lot of people understand how expensive it is to make a comic.
Oh, gosh.
You wouldn't think it's expensive.
That's why all mine are black and white.
Yeah. Because if you're the writer, you're the cheapest guy on the team, to be honest. Like, that's just how it is.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And again, like, just the sheer amount of time and effort, like, the art side of it, I mean, like, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, no, and it makes sense that it's expensive. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying, like, hey, they should be charging less. I've had a couple shows come up, and they're like, hey, I'm a writer. I'm looking for an artist. What's an average page rate? I said, that's a vast ocean, my friend.
Yeah, it really depends what it's going for.
Yeah, and I said, I could tell you what the rate that my artists have me paying, and I told him, he's like, that's insane. I was like, I hate to break it to you, that's on the low end. Like, from what I've heard from other people, like, it's way less than what a lot of people are charging. And he's just like, preposterous.
It's,
I was like, okay,
you
well,
end
then learn
up
to
spending
draw,
a whole life doing it.
And like, I've met someone like that who, he was a writer, he wrote a comic, and then he's like, okay, let me find an artist. And he was like, this is very expensive. He taught himself to draw. And then he was like, now let me get an inker. Very expensive. Taught himself to ink. Then he taught himself to color. And so he taught himself to letter. He does the whole thing himself now. And then he taught himself to animate. So he turned it into like an animated sort of movie, like a 3D rendering and stuff like that. So
and then he was 80.
And he died.
Again, if he ever tells you how he froze time, pass it on.
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
But it can be done. It's just, well, boy, you need a lot of time to do it. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, I think all three of us have done that sort of stuff. Either, right. Like, writing and making our own art. I've worked with several other writers. I have a co-writer right now, but it takes tons of time and having worked with writers that didn't realize how much time that took. And they're like, so how's it going? I'm like, I'm on the next page.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm like, yeah. Like I'm not doing this 24 hours a day. Like, can only do it so long.
You got to sleep sometimes. You have other things, other priorities too.
You're not allowed to sleep.
What is the sleep you speak of?
Yeah, no. Exactly. Yeah.
Just well, drink for me,
more
I got,
and more
I
coffee.
For me, I get lucky because with the nature of the work that I do, when I hand in a video, sometimes it takes them like 3 weeks to review it, which means I got 3 weeks to kill. So I just write the next script while I'm while I'm at work, because it's like, well, I mean, you know, my company's still getting paid and I'm still getting paid, but, you know, they're not giving me anything to do, which is not anybody's fault. Yeah. So it's like, all right, well, I'm just going to be productive and work on my books, you know, at the same time. So that way I'm not trying to like fit it into my nights, you know, when I'm already doing podcasts or going to shows and stuff like that. So it's just like, hey, fit it in where you can fit it in.
Oh, that's called time
and
management.
A lot of times, like, there's a lot of, like, I hear of, like a lot of artists and writers and stuff had, you know, taken jobs specifically where they had that kind of a downtime or had that kind of flexibility where they can actually fit it in, because otherwise it's basically impossible if you have any kind of a life. And, I mean, kudos for being able to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, that was sort of by accident that I figured it out. So I was like, oh, you know what? Okay, this is a thing I can do. And that doesn't happen all the time, obviously. But when it does, I take the opportunity. And I'm like, all right, next book it is. So,
So you're on here because your number three Kickstarter is beginning. Like, at the time we're recording right now, I think it starts tomorrow. Is it that when it comes
out? It's supposed to. I'm still waiting on one piece of art.
Oh, God. So, oh, God. Yeah.
If not, we'll see. But it's supposed to start tomorrow.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, in the very near future.
In the very near future.
If you want to give the listeners the pitch for number three and what some bonus bits.
Really, they should buy all three.
Why they want to go to the Kickstarter.
They,
and,
you know, why just buy the third book and jump in cold? Like, you're going to be confused. You're going to be like,
I'm assuming that's one of the options in the Kickstarters. You can get it in to get all three.
So there's you have a couple different options in the Kickstarter. So there is a specific tier. If you want just the books, you get the books, but I also threw in like a little cute werewolf mini print where it's like an adorable little werewolf that's playing around with like bones of humans and there's blood everywhere. But it's adorable.
That's cute.
It sounds adorable.
Yeah. So I'm throwing it in there as well. So that's you could do that tier if you just want that. Or you could back at whatever tier you want and then just add the other two books as add-ons. You could do it that way too. Either way. So you can definitely still get the other books along with this one. So you're not going to be left out or anything like that. But as I said before, the way that I pitch this book is it's basically H.P. Lovecraft meets Gilgamesh. And the basic premise is Gilgamesh
Solomon walks into a bar and H.P. Lovecraft is there. And he's like, hey, how's it going? Right. And H.P. Lovecraft is like, I don't know about the color of your skin. And Gilgamesh is like, well, I don't like your attitude, mister. Anyway.
And then they had fisticuffs.
It was awesome. So, it was great.
Comic book.
Put them up.
But so Solomon hears about the creating of this massive settlement, and it's supposed to be being organized by these gods that came down from the heavens. So he's curious, so he goes and checks it out. And essentially the story is this city gets built underneath the watchful eye of these gods. And then these gods promise Solomon that, hey, if you work with us, we will cure you at some point. You just have to work with us. And so the story is, you know, his life in this city, and he meets Gilgamesh, which is the son of one of these gods, and they become friends, and it sort of change or morphs and changes from there, where are these gods all on the up and up? You'll have to figure that part out on your own. But so and each of the gods has different abilities, like some of them, you know, can create life out of the sand, like put their hand in the sand and like a boar will pop out, and it'll be sand at first and then it'll turn into a fleshy boar and, you know, snakes and fish and all that stuff. So they're like a god of creation. And one of them is a storm god who has this big mace with a crystal in the middle of it. And all these gods are modeled sort of after Goliaths from D&D, if you're familiar with that race. They have a very similar look to that race anyways. So each of them has like different abilities and different looks and relationships and stuff like that. So, yeah. So the story sort of goes through there where I describe it as a slow burn, where it's Solomon, you know, going through this and living life and meeting these people and developing these relationships. And then everything kind of goes off the rails the last like third of the book, where it just goes absolute just craziness. So
I'm glad you sent us the first third to review.
Yes. Sounds like a bit of an odyssey, if I don't dare. Nah,
it's a little bit, no, it's a odyssey, journey, you know, there's a few different words.
Yeah.
It's, and it, like, I, if I can say, like, having read the first two now and a portion of number three, we're all very impressed.
Thank you.
And really dig the story. It's solid. I would easily go into a store and go, what's this? Flip, flip, flip. Yes, please. Give me my stuff for in exchange for currency. If we can recommend this to people, I'd go check it out. Go check the Kickstarter out at least and just see what's there. Check out the visuals. Amazing art. Really, really well done stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, and a great story. So thank you.
It's very cool to see the scale of everything and the amount of I'm very, very interested to see the remaining was it like 13 and a half? I forget exactly. My math skills aren't the greatest, but 13 and a half chapters to come. Yeah.
And again, you're talking about pages. I was like, no, there's a lot more than 13 pages.
Yeah, more than 13. More than 13.
Oh, man, they gotta wrap this up quick.
Yeah. But yeah, the fourth book is written. We're in the editing stage right now, so I'll be curious to see what people think of that one too. Each of these books to me they have a very different feel to it. One of the things that drives me nuts about like Marvel movies or like TV shows, like Supernatural even had this issue where they're always trying to like one up what was done before and like make the stakes even bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
It's like, how about you just tell a good story? It doesn't matter how big it is. Like, just make interesting characters and have them do interesting things, and good enough.
We say that a lot on this podcast when we talk and we complain about, like, event stuff in Marvel or DC or whatever. You're like, no, just stop doing that. Just tell the good story. Give it to a good writer and let them do their thing, and they will create an amazing thing for you. You want it. The business wants it to be a product, and they want to do events and whatever. Yeah. It's not. It'll be a good product if you just let the creatives make their good stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So for me, each of these books have a very different sort of feel to them. Like this one has a lot more, heartbreak to it than I would say the fourth book has. The fourth book doesn't have that same sort of level of I'm going to rip your emotional guts out kind of a thing. But it just, and then the fifth book, same sort of thing. The fifth book is the one I'm most looking forward to writing and seeing how it turns out because it's set in one of my favorite mythological time periods, which is Greece. It's kind of like the Greek Avengers where, you know, Solomon has to go and get these heroes of legend from the underworld and go on a quest to Tartarus and all this other stuff. So that one's going to be fun to see how that one ends up turning out. So the idea behind the books anyways, in terms of the 15, is that there are three arcs. Each arc is five books.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's sort of like a...
So if they were going to go, somebody's going to go find this, they're going to look up Lycan Solomon's Odyssey Kickstarter. That should easily...
You could do it that way. I made it even easier. If you just want to go to lycanbook.com, it will redirect you to the Kickstarter page.
There we go.
Lycan.
You may have to...
D-O-O-K.
Yes.
It's not Lycan. It's not like, I'm really liking this book, even though I am.
Or L-I-C-H-E-N?
Yeah, that's what, that's like a sponge or something? What the hell is that? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
It's the third, it's the other one. It's the one that's a werewolf.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So that should redirect you. Sometimes people have to put in the HTTP for it to work. I don't know why it gives guff sometimes. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, lycanbook.com will take you right to the Kickstarter page. And you can sign up for it now. And then when go live happens, you know, you'll get an email. If you use that same link tomorrow, I'll have changed the redirect so it goes straight to the Kickstarter page itself. So,
well, this won't be up until March 3rd or something like that? March 6th. So it'll definitely be up.
7th. But yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
We wish you the best. I'm going to go and pitch in, definitely, because I want these books. So
thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We got to make it to 15. Thanks. It's very, very important that that happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. One way or another, even if it kills me.
Well, I'd rather it not.
Side note.
Hopefully. Preferably
not.
Preferably not. Side note, I was at a convention in Erie 2 years ago, and there was a guy who was carnival barking up and down the aisles, and I was like, oh, God, what's this? He was dressed as a pirate. And it turns out that he was hired by Lake Erie's, like, they have, like, pirate boat cruises or something, to just go through there and hand out pamphlets. But he ran out of pamphlets, and they said he wasn't allowed to leave. So he just started carnival barking at people's tables. And most vendors didn't like it. So he comes over to our table, and he kept hanging out with us because we thought he was really funny. So he just hung around us, and we have a video where basically he starts elevator pitching the book out. But he's like in Solomon's Odyssey. He's like, 15 years in the making. Come back in 15 years if you're all still alive and we'll see how it turns out. Like the movie Boyhood. That won awards. Maybe this will too. And just like goes off on this tangent. And Shannon and I are just laughing our asses off while he's doing this. It's just like, and then he kept giving us crap. He's like, wow, this is some nerdy stuff here, making comics or whatever. And it's just like, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're dressed like a pirate, man.
But you're dressed like a fucking pirate.
Every once in a while, he would break character, and we're like, oh, what do you do? He's like, I draw comics. And then he would, like, cut back.
It's now, just did like, you get his website?
So he actually just did a Kickstarter, which I just backed, because he has a book series called Gods of Brutality.
Son of a bitch.
Is what the name of it was. Yeah, so.
Piratebarker.com. Yeah.
So. No, yeah, good guy. He actually randomly showed up in Gettysburg one day, and I had dinner with he and his wife and kid, and it was funny. Because he's like, where's a good place to get pizza? I said, there's not, but
good to know.
I'll give you one that I like to go to. So it was just, conventions are funny because you just never know who you're going to run into and meet, and that's why I always say networking, mm-hmm. networking. Like, you just never know what those relationships are going to turn into one day.
Totally. I've done them all over Canada. Like, going into the States, being a Canadian to go do them is a whole different ball of wax. But you just meet random people and there's ones I still connect with and thing. Like, put them in your pocket, like, oh, later on I might be able to tap into you, sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The one piece of advice I always say about networking is do not network with the intention of using a person, because people smell that from a mile away.
Yeah.
Oh, big time.
Just talk. And if you click, you'll click.
Just talk. Yep. And in fact, if you do them a favor, like ask if you see they're doing something and you just help them with whatever, cool beans. You're just strengthening your relationship. And then later on, they're much more likely to help you with whatever you're doing. And again, it's not like a transactional relationship. You're just building an actual relationship and using networking to do it. So it's always good to do it that way, as opposed to just going up to a table and being like, hi, I'm doing a thing. I want you to do this thing. Totally. It's like, no, don't do that.
I find like conventions are so bizarre in that, like, we're all at these tables and we're here all weekend. You might as well get to know everybody that you can see. And then who are we going to click with? We're going to go for lunch? Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to hang out. And then what are you doing? And just finding out everybody's fun story. Oh, yeah. And it just goes from there. Super fun. Anyways, thank you so much for joining us. We super much appreciate
it. Thank you for having
us.
Good luck. So you
thanks
can check
for sharing
out.
The book. It was, I think we all really enjoyed it. And we're going to definitely keep an eye on this, and everyone else should too.
Yeah. Thank you. Give the guy money, please. Give the book money. It's a good book.
You heard Kyle do it.
Money.
Kyle gives great advice, so you should listen.
So you also check out Hivehead Studios, Botched, the D&D podcast that he does. Anything else? Anything else you want to say before we kick you off?
I will say, for those of you who are interested in possibly checking out the podcast, our current season is set in the SCP universe.
I'm gonna check this out like right after the record. I've got schoolwork to do.
Okay.
But I was already interested, and then you mentioned SCP, and I'm like, thank you. Thanks. So I'm failing school now.
We actually, you know what? I take the credit. When in doubt, blame Dennis. That's a life lesson that you can live by.
Dennis,
I have a T-shirt that says it.
Good. Yeah, we're at. Well, you know what? We got lunch boxes too, so it's fine. But for those of you who are like, I don't know what the hell SCP is, we actually made an employee orientation video on our YouTube where it explains the entirety of SCP in like a very quick, concise video. Because what do I do for a living? I make training videos. So I was like, here we go. So it's very funny. We played it at our live show this year and everybody seemed to really enjoy it. So, feel free to check it out. Hit us up. If you leave a 5-star review, we will read it verbatim, just so you know. Or we hit chunks.
Say anything.
All right. Check it out. Go there. Do that. Click the buttons. Throw money.
Right at your computer.
Yes. That'll do. Yeah.
That's how that works. Huh. That's how Kickstarter works, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Technology needs to get there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And all the best.
And then they had fisticuffs.
It was awesome. So, it was great.
Comic book.